Sup, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is August 31st, 2018, and we are heading, ladies and gentlemen, gracefully into a three-day weekend. So all the stress, all the horse shit from the week, let's just have a nice, easy landing here together, and we'll coast right into our three-day weekend together. I hope your fridge is stocked. I hope your liquor cabinet is stocked, more importantly, arguably. But I am definitely ready for the weekend, and have a special guest with me today that I'm super stoked about, that a lot of people have been asking about. But first, let's just get through a little bit of housekeeping real quick. Everything on this podcast is subject to the disclaimer in my podcast description, on my website, on my Twitter. You can find it anywhere. But basically, it tells you that I am not an investment advisor. This is not investment advice. I really have no clue what I'm talking about. And do your goddamn research elsewhere. Folks, I can't tell you enough. Just don't listen to anything that I say. That's number one. With that being said, number two is that this episode of my podcast is brought to you by my Patreons. My Patreons are a group of people that choose to support me through a recurring monthly donation, whether it is small, whether it is large, doesn't really matter. I love you all equally. It's like having children, you know? I mean, you have your favorites, but you just never really tell the kids. You always just tell everybody that you support them all equally. And that's the case with my Patreons. But listen, I wanted to give a quick shout out to people like Jan K. Chris B just came through in a big way a couple days ago, which I appreciate. Lynn Holland, Brendan Egan, John Pollard, Blake Burns, Rob Brooks, Rob Ciari, some guy that just calls himself Force Majeure. Love that. Bobby USA, Brian Weckman, Andrea McCarthy, my man Falafel Diaper, whatever the fuck that means. SK, Chris Hicks, Michael Rasides, and then some older Patreons like Adam Pedraja, Brent James, Nick Zizis, Mick Dosti, Bill Williams, Richie Freimier, CJ Carey, Tom Wysocki, Aiden Archer, Bev Marsh, what up? I see you all. I see you all, fools. And if I don't shout you out on this episode, I'll shout you out on the next one. And if I don't shout you out there, I'll shout you out on Twitter. But if you're listening and you are a Patreon, just know that I sincerely and genuinely appreciate your support. It is fucking awesome. It's just incredible. I really am appreciative. I have with me today Andrew Left. Andrew is the executive editor at Citron Research. Citron is, of course, extraordinarily well known for taking on numerous frauds. They are one of the longest running, if not the longest running, stock commentary websites in the world, I think. They've been going, I think, for like, what, 17 years now, Andrew?
17 years this week.
Okay, so it's been 17 years this week, even though on your website it says 17 in one place and then 18 in another place. So let's start by clearing that up. What's going on? How are you? Thank you for joining me today.
I'm all good.
Are you?
Good. Nice. Yeah, nice to be here, right?
What is Andrew Left doing on a Friday afternoon? The people want to know, what does a normal Friday afternoon look like for you?
Well, normally I'm getting out of town someplace. That's what I'm doing now. I'm with my son, and we're going to play some golf in the desert for a few days.
Oh, that's cool. That's excellent. So, anyways, listen, I'm glad that you came on the podcast. I've had a bunch of people requesting to have you on, and a bunch of people interested in kind of knowing the story of Andrew Left. Obviously, look, you're an incredibly successful investor, and your voice has a lot of gravitas on the street. You know, you can move markets, and your opinion is widely covered, and you get a ton of television and media coverage. I guess the first thing that I wanted to ask you is, like, how did you get started doing all of this?
I mean, I started shorting stocks a long time ago. Like, if people watch that movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, and you saw all those stocks they were doing, well, I was the guy on the other side. I was shorting all those stocks. And then that industry went away real fast, and then I started to short the over-the-counter stocks. And I kept moving up market and up market. And then finally, in 2001, I decided I just didn't want to sit around anymore and wait till the stocks to fall apart. I want to take an active role. So I started what at the time was called Stock Lemon, and I started writing my first column. And I remember when I put it up, everyone's like, can you do this? You could actually write about a stock that you're short and write negative stuff. I'm like, it's truth. So why not? And sure enough, it worked.
Yeah, and that was when? That was like the 90s?
That was 2001.
Okay, all right. And then how did
August 2001.
So how did you do when you first started? And, you know, what did you do prior to that? How did you even get exposure into the industry?
Well, I was always, I've been shorting stocks and trading the market since like 19, a friend of mine taught it to me. So since around like 93, 94. And then that was, And so I was always doing that.
How did you first learn? Like, what was your first fucking, like, boneheaded, like, stocks 101 experience like?
I mean, my first book, in the beginning, and I was short this book's a million in 99, and I think the stock went from like 14 to like 60 in one day, and everyone's like, it's the next Amazon. I was on the Yahoo message boards, and I was pretty much short, and I lost everything. How does that sound? If the stock didn't go down, I was at zero. And I'm like, no, it's not Amazon. And they're like, you're just short, you're scared. I'm thinking, you're right, I am short and scared. That's actually the last time I was really scared.
What stock was that again?
It was Books a Million. And it was Thanksgiving weekend, 1999. And I think the stock, I'm not kidding, it went from like, in 4 hours, it went from 15 to like 60.
What did your short position look like at the time? How many shares?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I sell 10 to 20. Okay, it's hard. So where's it now? 25. Sell 10 to 25. Where's it now? 30. Sell 10 to 30. Where's it now? 35. Sell 10 to 35. Where's it now? 40. Finally, we got to a point. My broker's like, hey, boss, there's no selling more. I'm like, uh-oh. And then the market closed. I'm like, God. I spent the whole weekend just shitting in my pants.
So from there, how did you hone your craft? I mean, did you have any other learning experiences, we'll call them, or what?
I mean, I've had a lot of fuck-ups, but that was the only one that was going to, like, put me out of business. You know, I've had other ones that have set me back. Last year, I'll be honest, I covered some Bitcoin around the high. I was short Bitcoin at, like, 14,000, you know, 13,000, 15,000. It hit 19,000. I'm like, oh, God, what am I doing? I'm short this black box nonsense. And as I was covering some of it, I actually told my broker, said, I'm making the high on this fucking thing. I know it. But it was the big boy thing to do. So, you know, whatever. You go on.
What, now, if I can ask, what did your account size look like that first time you got ran over?
Oh, with the Books a Million?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever it was all blazed up in that stock at the time. You know, it was probably... And it took me a while to get there. I don't even know. At the time, maybe the account was only $500,000, $700,000. I forgot. But I just remember it all being, you know, sell more, sell more. Like, what am I going to do? It was because, you know, I was 28. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to go live with my mama? No way.
When it reopened, so what did the call actually look
when,
like?
When it reopened, so it reopens higher. And the brokerage firm is like, you know, we're going to have to start covering you soon. I'm like, no, don't worry, I'll send in money, in which I don't even know what the hell I was going to do, to be honest. And I just looked at my screen going, come on, motherfucker, get the fuck down! And then it starts falling. And when it's falling by like $4 or $5 at a time. I think my average on the thing was like 38, maybe 39. I covered the whole thing at like 37. I made like 50 grand. You know, oh, shit, my pants, smoked 8 packs of cigarettes. And then literally within 2 days, it was like at $21. I'm like, all I had to do was hang on for 2 more days. I could have made like, you know, $300, $400, whatever.
So how did you get from – so walk me through like from there through the permutation to Stock Lemon and then kind of how that wound up turning into Citron.
I mean, I went ahead. So that was just – I was shorting stocks. And that's before people actually had, you know, blogs or writing. That's when they were just message boards. Actually, there was a site called Raging Bull, and that was the big message board site back in the day. And then, Silicon Investor also. And then it was just a matter of progression. Kept shorting stocks. I made it through the dot-com bust. Found a little niche for myself. And then I was just sick of waiting for stocks to crack. And I'll tell you, everyone, the key thing is this. There was a website that I found out that nobody else knew about. It was called Google. And Google allowed you, when I discovered Google, to search public documents, and no one else would ever do that. So I'd find stocks and find more shit on these, you know, bullshit companies on just using Google. And no one was using Google. I think people forgot how unsophisticated internet users were back in 2000. So I use Google, and I'm like, wow, this stock's bad, and here's why it's bad. And I'm just going to go put it out there. I'm going to go make a website and put it out there. So if you remember, there was, used to be like these stock promo sites called like Superstock, AmazingStock.com, NextGreatStock.com, and all that shit. So I'm like, what's the opposite of Superstock? Stock lemon, like a bad stock. I didn't want to call it bad stock, but a lemon, you know, something's bad. So I said, okay, I'll make a website called Stock Lemon. I called the web designer and said, hey, can you make a website? And I'll put up these articles. And God, my articles were bad, but they worked. It was great. And then you had to get exposure. I'd click it and put it on a website. And then everyone, so for the first, like, you know, probably 8 years, what I really did, Raven, and pioneering this shit, is I took the lawsuits. Because you can imagine, right, everybody starts suing you.
Yep.
And
I can't imagine.
Oh, and I got sued all the time. I actually had one fucking lawyer who just used to call every company I write about and say, hey, do you want to sue him? I'll sue him for you. And that was like his side job was me. and we beat him like four times in court. So.
And now you golf with him?
No, fuck him. And then I actually had one case, and it went to the California. It got published. It was GTX Global v. Left, and it's, can I write a stock opinion on a company and be shorted at the same time, or at what point am I considered competition? I'll give you an example. You know, McDonald's can't put out an ad that says Burger King sucks, you know?
Right.
Because you're competition. So can I short your stock and do that, right? So whatever. That's what I did.
And then that Stock Lemon transformed to Citron when?
Yeah, so then a Stock Lemon, I think it was like maybe 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I'm like, all right, time to class the place up a little bit, right? and I said, I didn't want Stock Lemon anymore because just the name poisoned the well. You know, especially if you're going to go up market, it was too tongue-in-cheek, right? So I said, okay, I have to, you know, take Stock Lemon and make it something fancier. So I said, okay, Citron, obviously, for lemon, and research, because that's what it is. It's research. And then it's amazing, Citron research. I just remember coming up with it and thinking about it, and just to think about, you know, 17 years later, pretty wild.
Yeah, and you've done well.
Sometimes.
Well, you've amassed a really good track record for yourself, and I know...
I have. By the way, the most difficult part is this. I want all your readers, listeners, to keep it in perspective. We're in a 10-year bull market. Shit just going up right now. Like, it's just levitating.
Right.
Valuations don't mean anything. The market's on happy pills, which is fine. And if you're the beneficiary of it, it's great. But if someone's going to be a naysayer of it, you can't just dismiss them. Because one day, I don't know when, it won't be another 10 years, there'll be a cycle. That's the way the market works. And there'll be corrections and everything else. And then all of a sudden, so I'll go from being the town dummy to like the guy everybody wants to hear. And I'm fine. Like I'm very fine and resolved with the fact that as a short seller, I'm not going to have the type of record as if I was like a momentum investor and said, hey, let's go buy the FANG stocks. Duh. I mean, what do you need, another jerk off to tell someone to buy the FANG stocks? No.
Yeah, I know. Well, I said as much in another podcast that I did where somebody was interviewing me asking about like the underperformance of hedge funds over the last 10 years. And I'm like, the problem is you have active managers that short bubbles and buy value when exactly what you said is what's happening is you could throw a fucking dart and the entire market has been going up over the last 10 years. So I think,
well,
I think
you're talking about right there. That's, you're talking about Mr. Einhorn.
And that's exactly who I'm talking about. And go ahead.
But what makes that a bad strategy that actually puts you double short the market? If you're short bubbles and long value, you're double short. If you wanted to say I'm short bubbles and long bubbles or short value and long value, it's there. But those are both neutral short positions. When you're short, think about it this way. When you're long value and you're short bubbles, you're actually almost a double short exposure, which is, you know, that's probably the worst place to be in this market.
Well, the point I was trying to make to this guy was that guys like Einhorn, their talent will start to show when we turn into a market that isn't just everything's going up, when it becomes like a stock picker's market, or it becomes, you know, the market stagnates a little bit, forcing people to actually fucking use their brains as opposed to any jerk off, like you said, just going out, buying a bucket of stocks and them all going up regardless of fundamentals, regardless of valuation, regardless of how much debt they have. None of that stuff matters right now.
Oh, I saw a great cartoon today. It said, I can't even, there's not even a dip for me to buy. like if people want to buy the dip,
well,
you can't
true.
Even buy the dip now because there's no dips to buy.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
I personally did not have a great August. Thank God August is over, but it's okay. I've done this so many times, and the ideas come. I had a great idea that came just the other day, yesterday. It paid me nicely, and I know the ideas will come. And then when the market turns, the ideas will come on a more broad scale, and I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, I hope to, you know, I obviously have long exposure, and you know, that's that. Try to stay nimble.
So let me ask you a question then, because that dovetails nicely. I had a couple people, a couple of my dedicated listeners sent me a couple questions for you. One of them is, you know, where do your investment ideas come from?
Oh, I eat, sleep, breathe this shit. Okay. There's no such thing as me, like, you know, when people say to me, how many hours do you sleep at night? I'm like, who sleeps at night? So when my ideas come from, I'm always speaking, reading, talking, listening, speaking, reading, talking, listening, 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 reading, listening. So other fund managers, you know, observing the world around me. But, you know, I lived it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that because I've known you for 6 years, so I know exactly, you know, you're fucking obsessed. When I first started talking to you like 6 years ago or 7 years ago, whenever it was, like you told me like that first week, you're like, I'm going to fucking retire or whatever. You know, and I've been listening to you for 7 years telling me, oh, I'm going to retire or whatever, you know.
Well, no, which is true. I will retire when we finish our next cycle. But we have
What does that mean? What do you mean?
Well, we have our next 10, 15% correction, okay?
You're going to retire?
Let's just say. Well, I'm going already, as it is now, I trade less and less of my money than I used to. So it's not retire, but it's trading less of your money.
All right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I have exposure in hedge funds. I have exposure in real estate. And, you know, I used to be, you know, 20 years ago, I was all in, all day, all in. You know, right. Now, so that's my version of retiring. Would be scaling back my investment capital.
Okay. All right. So, but you'll probably still commentate on things, right?
It's like telling a bird not to fly. This is what I do.
Exactly. You remember the first name that I called you or you called me on to talk about?
If it's 6 years ago, right?
Yeah, six years ago.
Okay, let me think. What year are we now? We're 2018. That'd be 2012. Six years ago. Is it Arthrocare? No.
No, that was after that.
Was it? What name?
It was Questcore.
Oh, my baby.
Yeah. That one took a little while, huh?
What a pain in the ass that was. It's back up now, actually. I'll tell you, the champion of that whole thing is the CEO of Questcore. Don Bailey made a lot of money, and everybody forgot his name.
Yeah, exactly. And there were a bunch of ongoing investigations into him, too, when the company was bought out. Because I remember reading in the merger proxy all the disclosures that, you know, they had marketing investigations, they had Department of Justice investigations. And me and you, we had a mutual friend who I talked to about this name who told me that, you know, he thought that those investigations had some legs to them. He had one reason to believe or another, and then we just never heard about it again.
The investigations never have legs to them. Rarely. and especially that one. You know why? Because the people who are getting it, it was being positioned with sick babies. So on one hand, you had a bunch of short sellers who were saying blah blah blah. On the other hand, how they positioned it, you had sick babies. Despite the fact that sick babies were only a small minute part of their revenue,
they positioned it
like sick babies, and no one's going to vote against sick babies. That's it.
Yeah, very small. And then, so let me ask you another question, man. You've been coming out with long ideas. I mean, at least I don't remember since I've been following you, since I've known you, I don't remember you coming out with too many long ideas. It seems like of late you've had more and more. So what do you look for?
I have more because how about this? As much as I'm called the short seller, I'm not. I'm an investor. I want to make money. You know, Raven, I always tell you that one thing. I am so beyond fucking focused on money. Money, money, money. And that's because it's what I do for a living. If I was a pediatrician, I'd be focused on curing sick kids. You know, if I was a pilot, I'd be focused on flying the plane. I'm in the stock market. I'm focused on making money. So that being said, I come across many situations that are great longs. And I might see something that the next guy doesn't see. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to kick it out. And the last thing I do is you'll never see me write a long on, Facebook or, people. So I like to give the other side of the story. So I prefer to write on something that's neither undercovered or overshorted or something that, a story that's not really out there.
Yeah. So what is your investment thesis? What does your investment process rather look like for a long investment? I mean, you generally just try to find.
Yeah, I try to find, first of all, if there's a catalyst, what's my safety, if things go bad on it. My real measure is, would I buy more lower? Do right. I like this business enough that if something happens tomorrow, market crashes for whatever stupid reason, whatever it is, do I like this business enough that I would buy more lower?
Speaking of market crashes, what kind of exposure did you have in 2008? And what was that like for you?
Oh, the good old days. 2008 was a lot of fun for a little bit. It was scary. It was fun because as a short seller, it was like shooting fish in a barrel. What was scary is as a concerned American, which I am, I don't want to see. It was very concerning if you saw our financial system possibly get ruined. And I wasn't digging that. It was kind of scary. The social unrest that could have happened. So that was a little freaky on me. But, yeah, I did well on stocks. You could short anything. What I screwed up is in 2009, once you realized the system wasn't collapsing, I should have just bought everything. I did for a while, but I sold it too soon. So, oh, well.
Yeah, I guess in 2008, the money you make as a short seller is only as good as the guarantee that you're going to be able to take it out of your fucking brokerage account and that your brokerage isn't going to go ass up, right?
I want you to think about that every day, even right now. I'm like, and it's whatever. I mean, it's more secure than people who buy Bitcoin and they get hacked. At least I know there's that. But it's we have an amazing trust with our banking system, right? I mean, you think you have money, but your money is nothing but, digits on a computer screen.
Right. Yeah, and that's what's crazy. When people give me shit about liking to own gold for that very reason, that's exactly what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is, look, I'm diversified across brokerages, I'm diversified across banks, and I'm diversified across asset classes just in case. And if you don't think that's a possibility, it is a possibility because though it wasn't a major it wasn't a major collapse in 2008, but people with Lehman lost fucking tons of money.
I don't think people who had Lehman stock,
I'm talking about had their money with Lehman.
Nah, nobody lost their money.
That's not true.
I thought all money got guaranteed. I really don't know of anybody who lost money.
Okay.
I mean, I know they're broker terms, but I don't think anyone, lost their money. I thought everything got guaranteed. And by the way, it's amazing that the banks paid back the government the TARP money. The government made money on it. Banks got on their feet again. And hopefully, for my sake, I hope the banks start outperforming the rest of the stocks. And I hope some of these high flyers that don't make money start coming down.
Do you think that there's a bigger problem with our monetary policy as a whole that's going to eventually and inevitably cause a much bigger fuck-up than 2008?
I can't opine on that. It's not my – what do I know? Well, I mean, I could say I could, you know, I've honestly, if any kind of opinion I'd give on that would be just, you know, wouldn't have any decent basis to it. I'd rather say nothing than give an opinion that I have no idea about. I make my most, listen, as I told you 5 minutes ago, Raven, I'm focused on making money. Me thinking about greater Fed monetary policy, I'm not teaching economics at a university or writing for a newspaper. That does not make me money. If the market wants to go up, I'll find ways to make money in an up market. Market wants to go down, I'll find ways to make market in a down market. Sideways, whatever it is, I can't worry about what the fuck the government does.
All right, I have one person that wanted me to ask you whether or not you're still, are you still following Ubiquity? And if you are, what your thoughts are on Ubiquity?
Yeah, I mean, Ubiquity is a tightly held stock. I see it, obviously, wow, you know, and I think there's an SEC investigation into it. But, I mean, you know, they use a lot of the company's money or credit lines to buy back stocks. So, you know, it is what it is.
Perfect.
I'm not involved. I mean, I really don't like to be involved in any stock when there's just no stock in the flow. I mean, how can you be short any stock with no stock in the flow? And even if something was a complete joke, I mean, we've seen stocks like crazy squeezes go to huge numbers because of the float dynamics, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, and that's like, you know, Rick Pearson has written about a couple of stocks like that. Like, I think that was his thesis on Dillard's. And
the infinity squeeze.
The infinity squeeze, exactly. And on BITA, I think he wrote the same thing, right? He was making the argument that the share structure mechanics would eventually cause a squeeze like that.
That's a good phrase by Rick. The infinity squeeze.
It actually is. It caught on. I've said it a bunch of times. Rick's a good guy. Anyways, so what do you think about the ongoing Tesla saga? Do you have any invested interest in either side of that equation?
Yeah, fuck Tesla. I mean, I've lost more money. I could buy every single person listening to this podcast. I could probably buy a Tesla with the money I've lost in that stock. That being said, you know, I don't really don't even have a position right now. And now it's probably going to go down. So now it's probably the best time to short it because it's the only time in 3 years I have not been short. And just because I was short with the whole funding secured bullshit and I got stopped out when that happened. And then I'm like, you know, and then I hear people's the argument like, oh, 420, isn't that expensive? Isn't 420 too rich? And I'm thinking, but so 320 is okay with you? Because I'm in the stock thinking it's a zero. And then all of a sudden I hear people who are criticizing the deals like, you know, 420 is a bit expensive, maybe like 320. I'm like, really? Well, I'm not in the stock for 320 or even 280, you know? And the fact that the other side of that conversation wasn't saying, what do you mean 420? This is a zero. I was a bit surprised. And I'm like, right. You know what? There's so many things. You know, they say they made a chip that's 10 times faster than NVIDIA's GPU. Can they sell it? What's their autonomous division worth? I have no idea. You know, they got the Saudis to buy it over 300. I mean, they're not complete dummies. I don't get any of it. Trust me. But I know that there's a lot of stupid money out there. And you know, I don't mean stupid, ignorant money, stupid, like big money that's just flying around. So why not? I mean, I just said, you know what? I can't scale the position. It's nothing that I'll ever be short a ton of now. And let the next guy fight it.
Well, let's assume, like, all things being equal, it's a normal market and it's not just, you know, a bull market that's only going up. How do you, if you're trying to look for something organically, what do you look for in a short candidate? And how do you, what's your process for identifying companies to short?
Oh, man. You know, I just go through a lot of them. You know, I speak to a lot of people. I go through a lot of ideas. I look for businesses that are terminal. I look for businesses that'll miss. Hopefully, the main thing is I look for something that can have a catalyst. You know, my biggest mistake that I make is shorting a stock that has no catalyst because I just hate the business. And there's a few of those. I don't want to start naming. Like, I'm like, what a stupid business. But there's no catalyst.
Right.
And in the meantime, and they just float up. So.
What out of all the financial media coverage that you get and all the appearances you make, who's your favorite person to go on with and why?
That's a good question.
I know. I just thought of it too. I don't have anything written down.
You know, everyone has their own virtues. You know, Bloomberg really gives me an opportunity to speak what I want to say. You know, Wapner always likes to take me on, which I don't mind. I mean, I like being challenged because it just makes the interview more genuine. What I dislike is happens when I do Melissa Lee, and I like Melissa Lee. I like the closing bell. I like that whole thing, Fast Money, whatever the hell it is. What I don't like is when people say, well, what's your position? Is you this? Because my position's irrelevant. You know, what's relevant is the information that I'm kicking out, right? When I first wrote about Valiant, I think CNBC was more concerned about how much money I made rather than the fact that I exposed fraud at one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. Not to mention, end up saving taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. I'm like, well, how much money did you make? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the Valiant saga was enormous. I mean, that was
the irony. I'll tell you something funny I never really talk about. Your readers got a kick out of. Do you know who made the most money on Valiant?
You're asking me who made the most money?
I think
I know who, but I don't know. I don't want to say it on the podcast because it's somebody that it was a friend of yours, right? Like an underling of yours?
No. Bill Ackman.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, think about it this way: if Bill Ackman's getting 2 and 20,
right,
for 2 years, and for 2 years he's up how much on that stock? He doesn't pay it back when he loses.
Yeah.
So let's say he's up what? He's up $400 million on the stock.
Yeah, he did.
$500 million on it.
He did really well on the way up.
Actually, he's up $1 billion, right? He's getting paid $200 million on the position. So if he's up $1 billion for 2 years in a row, he's up $400 million. You know what I'm saying? Think about the money he's making.
Oh yeah, he did very well for himself. I'm sure.
By the way, that he didn't have to give back.
Right. Yeah, and I thought it was fascinating the way the whole thing went down after the information came out about Philidor, and after it was made really abundantly clear the way that the company was doing their accounting relating to the acquisitions. I don't know, it seemed relatively clear, and to watch one person after the other, even Ackman and then Donville. Did you watch what Donville said about you on BNN, that guy?
Yeah, fuck him. I saw him before. The fucking loser. Just to talk like that. Now, and I say that for a reason. He doesn't keep an open mind. I mean, listen, I've made plenty of mistakes, and there's been guys on the other side. I say, you know, good on you with that. And, you know, we're going to be in this game, and we're going to make mistakes, and this is not personal. This is just a business game. And
right.
The fact that, one, he couldn't have an open mind. Two, he talked things personal. Three, he called me a Nevada turkey. Is that it? The Nevada turkey?
He did call you a Nevada turkey. That's right.
I don't even know what that means, but, you know, it just shows, you know, his immaturity as a person, as an investor, and, you know, and is most of all, in my opinion, it shows his incapacity to ever be the custodian of someone's money.
Well, you know what's interesting is, like, me and you have had a lot of talks over the years about, and I'll credit you with helping me become a little bit more sophisticated in the way that I see everything, because I've learned a lot from you also too. And it's not some mushy like, oh, you're my mentor shit, but you know, I think one of the things that I remember you telling me more than once when we would talk about Valiant was, look, I got no problem with Bill Ackman. I, you know, he's got kids. I got kids. I saw him when we were skiing or some shit, you told me one day. You're like, whatever.
I saw him twice. Yeah. I see him all the time. I see him on vacation. I saw him in Mexico last year. I saw him skiing the year before.
Did you talk to him?
I saw him. You know, I did. And very briefly in Mexico. He was with his family, his daughters. I wasn't going to, you know, what am I going to say? What's he going to say to me? You know?
Right.
Listen, this is business. You know, when I write on a company, you're like, why do you hate this company? I don't hate any. How would I hate a company? How could I hate a company? Even with Tesla, I can't hate a company.
Right.
I mean, you know, I might not like its business. I might think it's overvalued. I might want to short it, but there's no hating it. You know what? I hate companies that do bad. I take that back. When a company, like I saw Valiant, is raising prices, you know, and or I've seen a few companies ripping people off. Yeah, I guess I kind of hate the company.
Well, I was just talking to Hedgeye about this. We were doing a podcast about Tesla, And one of the things that the point I was trying to make was just because I think the equity portion of your capital structure is worth less than what the market's pricing it at, doesn't mean that I hate your CEO or I hate your company or I hate your philosophy or what you're trying to do.
I gotta give the guy a lot of credit. I believe in, 10 years from now, there'll be a large percentage of his EVs on the road, and a lot of it is due to the proof of concept done by Musk. But, it doesn't mean that I don't own a stock, whatever. The point is, when you invest, nothing personal. This is just money. Your money doesn't know. It's like when people say, I'm down on the stock. I'll just sell it when I get back to even. Well, what the fuck does that mean? Like, you think you have a chance to get back to even? So, every day I look at all my investments, a key thing, and say this one question. If I wasn't short the stock before, would I short the stock today? And right. If I say to myself, no, but I'm down in it, I cover it. The question is, why am I short this? If I wasn't short at the past, you know what I'm saying? Today's a brand new day. If I wasn't already short stock, would I put this position on today? That's right. The key question I always ask myself.
So do you have anything, I guess one question I want to ask you too is like, who are some of the larger mainstream investors out there that people would know that you like, that you admire, that you follow their work? People that when they post something, when they put up a letter, when they go on TV, it's an interview that you turn on and you want to watch.
I mean, that's another question. When you say interview, I like to watch. I mean, I think George Soros' books and his quotes about investing are the greatest. So that's Soros. When it comes to, whose letters are great, I mean, obviously Dan Loeb writes great letters. The question is, how about this question? Is there anybody who, if they were on the other side of the stock, I would get nervous?
Right. That's a good question.
Maybe Elliot. A lot of the Tigers are all the same work, and you know what it is. And if you're really that scared, the question is, it makes you, when you look at the other side and by seeing who's in it, if you see who's known as, quote unquote, these smart guys in it, it makes you double and triple check your homework, if you're short it. And then I have no problem just calling them up and speaking to people and, nicely saying, hey, what do you see I don't see? And that happens quite often.
Who are the other short sellers that when they publish, you make sure you read them? Or you at least familiarize yourself with what it is that they put out? Because look, I know you pretty well. I mean, not very well, but I know you well enough to know that you don't waste a lot of fucking time doing things that you don't want to do. And like, I've been hung up on by you enough times to know that when you're done talking,
done. Listen to me. When I'm done talking, I just hang up. I did it to my wife also.
No, I don't care. Goodbye. You're not hurting my feelings.
I love you. I'll speak to you soon.
wait. You're not hurting my feelings. I'm trying to make the point of
here's what I don't like.
Okay.
Attention all short sellers who write short reports. Please don't make 60 pages. Nobody will read them. Okay? Nobody. I think I had an argument with Carson Block once. I told Carson, I if there was 10 people who read his Sino Forest report, I'd be surprised. They're so burdensome to read these long reports, Not to mention the fact, if you're explaining fraud, go explain it. So, who do I read? I mean, I try to read, most all of them if it's a topic that's interesting. The problem is the stocks move so fast, okay, that you have to first trade the stock and then read the report. So it's kind of like screwed up,
Yeah, in most cases, you're right, yeah.
So how am I supposed to trade this, What am I supposed to do here? So, if anything's written on a stock that I follow, I read everything. So I read every short report, most of these guys,
So of late, you've been opining on marijuana stocks, which is interesting because, that's kind of, I guess, the trend of stocks that got, I don't know if you want to call them hot or whatever, but the trend of stocks that are attracting people that don't understand the stock market is basically how I describe it. Went from being anything with blockchain in its name to now we're kind of on this cannabis craze. And you've done really exceptionally well, actually. You shorted CVSI and that got pummeled on your report, and then you came out and went long Tilray, and Tilray went from fucking like 26 to 61 in like 3 weeks or something ridiculous. And then you just put out something on Kronos a couple days ago also, and that wound up getting hit on the report, though it came back a little bit today. So are you looking at more marijuana stocks? Are there any other names that you're looking at? Or
problem is, I think a lot of them are fully valued. You know, you can believe in the industry and not believe in the stocks. You know, Kronos is a great short. That stock's going to like $2. So I'll keep shorting that one. And I can tell you, just from getting all the emails that I got on yesterday, it's all retail investors who have no business to be in the stock market, honestly.
What kind of emails are you getting? What kind of emails are you getting?
God. Die, you Jew bastard. I hope your children get leukemia. Good stuff like that. I really am. But I don't care. I mean, you know, it's part of my job. But more importantly, you can just tell. You know, if someone's going to call me and say, hey, you know, we looked at it a different way. If I tell you I got 100 emails and not one of them had any kind of, like, intelligent counter thesis to what I wrote, I'm like, okay. So that's the shareholder base. I'm fine.
What's the craziest response you've gotten to being short something? You know, I have a friend who told me once, you know, it's not the guy that loses $1 million that's going to drive to my house and kill me. It's going to be a guy that loses $100 on something
that
I'm shorting.
I think I told you that. That's what I always say.
Okay.
What's
the craziest shit that's happening?
Beyond Sued and all that other stuff and the Hong Kong nonsense, the craziest stuff is in 2000 and – no, earlier. What am I talking about? Yeah, maybe like 2003. I run on this company called YPNet. And the CEO, whose name was Angelo Tullo, and he fancied himself with being like a half a mobster. You're like, hey, thinking, you know, does he know who he's messing with? Something like that. And it was called YP.com, YPNT were the symbols. And all of a sudden, I'm working out of the house, and my ex-wife said to me, there's two black Suburbans parked outside of the house. And I'm like, oh, my God. And they're like, does Andrew Left live here? You know, we just want to say hi to him. And probably the only true bonding moment I ever had with my ex-wife, she walked out there and, like, spit on their cars and, get out of here! And I'll never forget, I get in, I call the CEO. I'm like, oh, boy, now it's on. And I think the CEO ended up getting in. It was a fraud. The CEO got indicted, I think, like 8 months later. But it was pretty nuts. I mean, so I've never had, like, anyone come to my house and saying, you know, kind of like, well, I just want to know. We know where you live. Like, what does that mean? At the end of the day, this is the stock market. I mean, I've had other crazy things, but, I mean, this is the stock market.
What other crazy things? Give me one more.
Some things you don't always – won't necessarily talk about, but, sometimes you're out. I get a lot of, listen, I was out on Halloween this year, and some guy starts yelling, you, fuck you, Shopify, Shopify, fuck you, Shopify, I don't even know this guy. And when I was commenting on Bitcoin, I had people all the time coming out to me about Bitcoin. Oh, I once wrote on a stock, and the kids, and the guy, the CEO of the company was in my son's class. His kid was in my son's class. And I was like, hey, what's up, buddy? And he knew who I was. Like, you know, what am I going to say, right? I try to obviously handle that with, you know, some form of grace involved. You know, it is what it is.
Right, right. And what do you say to people that just say you're full of shit, man? They say you're just going out, you're trying to cause a panic, you're trying to stir shit up and make a quick buck. What do you say to those people?
It's not that easy to cause a panic and make a quick buck. I'll be the only guy who's been 17, 24 years to make it a quick buck. First of all, I would like to make some quick bucks, not buck. And more importantly, cause a panic. You know, I just tell the truth. Raven, my standard is this, if I write a story or not. Do I believe the story is intellectually honest? And those are my two words that I use to myself all the time. Is it intellectually honest? So, I don't know. Here, I'll tell you something you don't know. I had that Lumber Liquidator story first. That was my story. And I did the work, the lab, and I passed on the story. And the reason why I passed on the story is I couldn't find a victim online. I went online and couldn't find one person who was sick because of formaldehyde in their house. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And I wasn't going to go ahead, put out a story, and tell a million people, or whatever it is, that, oh, your house might be contaminated and poisoned, and I can't, just because I tested the formaldehyde levels high, but can't find one person online who's like, you know, I'm sick because of my floors, right? Not one. So even though I could have put that story out, made a lot of money, taken the glory, like, you know, oh, look, I found this story, I said, I'm not doing it. And it wasn't because of the company. I felt bad for the thousands of customers who would read it and not realize that I'm just trying to make money, and they're going to bed at night thinking, is my kid going to get sick from my floors, you know?
Yeah.
So that wasn't my game. That wasn't my game. And by the way, I thought the Herbalife short, and I'll tell you this because I know you were there, I thought the premise behind the Herbalife short was beyond extremely racist. I watched that movie.
Really?
And that movie was like, oh my God, in my opinion, that movie was like saying Hispanic people can't make decisions for themselves. Imagine them doing that same exact movie with Asians. They would never do that.
Yeah, but
no one would ever say, oh God, we have to protect Asian people, you know?
Yeah, but the company was specifically targeting Latinos in the Latino community.
It does make a difference. By the way, it does make a difference. They should have said you were targeting lower income people. By making it you're targeting Hispanic people, makes it as if Hispanic people, okay, are victims. You follow what I'm saying here?
Well, Hispanic people were victims.
Yes, but the point is that they can't defend themselves. If they were targeting Jewish people, would there be a story there?
Yeah, there would be a story there.
Because people,
of course there would.
No, people believe that Jews are capable of, you know, let's say, defending themselves.
Or making financial decisions. This is totally different. This was the company in internal documents targeting lower income Latino immigrants.
Oh, they should have just kept it at lower income. In my opinion, but if
the case was the company was going after just lower income people, that would have been fine. But the company was specifically targeting the Latino community, and there's internal documents to back that up.
And another thing I don't like about the movie, I'll tell you right now, was the guy saying, you know, I quit my job because I thought I could do this and make money. I'm like, well, you're not supposed to quit your job. Maybe you're just supposed to do this on the side. When I was a kid growing up, I had a single mom. She sold encyclopedias. She sold meat. She sold oil, you know, eel skin. My mom did anything as a side, you know, to try to make money as a single mom.
Right.
So, you know, I just didn't see why a guy – so if a guy says, you know what, I sell this on the side, you know, okay, but he goes, like, I quit my job. You shouldn't have quit your job.
Well, the argument from the short side was that the company was systematically deceiving these people, and the FTC found that to be the case.
Yeah. I know. It was a compromise. I never liked the short as a short position.
You didn't like the movie. When we first talked about it, you told me before you didn't like the movie. You said, you know, you didn't have any gripes with the actual thesis. Your gripe to me was, when I called you about it 6 years ago saying you should look at it, was the government isn't going to do anything. The government's not going to shut them down. It's the same thing Sam told me. Sam told me the same fucking thing. Sam's like, look, you know, you're right about all this stuff, but the government is not in the business of shutting down companies, and they generate a lot of cash. And that was always the argument from the longs, and it won out.
And by the way, can I tell you another thing?
Sure.
Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're screaming now.
I think that right now, it's so funny. I was looking at, because going back to cannabis and everything,
yeah.
I've been looking at this whole like CBD craze that's going on. I'm like, how does Herbalife not go by a CBD company, reinvent itself? Imagine that. You have a sales force of all these people. They're selling CBD oil branded and all the advantages and all that. It'd be a pretty interesting concept.
Well, I thought after the whole fucking FTC mess, they should have went out and acquired a retail nutrition company like GNC, so they would be able to kind of have 2 feet on the ground, this, you know, horseshit multi-level marketing model, which I think is nonsense, and then, you know, have a retail model. So that at least they could tell people, look, you know, we have fucking stores you can go into now.
Not a bad idea.
So
I never liked that short, but whatever. Thank God I never liked the short. I should have bought it, but whatever. I didn't do that either.
Yeah, no, you were you never liked it from the get go. I don't know.
They got a lot of salespeople, and you know, but whatever. I just don't have the faith in the government to shut things down.
Right, and Sam said the same exact thing when I argued about it with him for 3 hours and 24.
And by the way, the most important thing is this, very important. The day Bill Ackman lost that fight, he opened his mouth. Because the government was going to shut him down.
Say it again. Shut him down. I lost you for a second.
Bill Ackman lost that fight was the day he opened his mouth. Because the government is not going to bail out or save, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Hi. I'm short $1 billion worth of Herbalife. And then all of a sudden I was like, yeah, we're going to shut them down for you, Mr. Ackman. Right. Thank you, Mr. Government. You know, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, more than one person has said that, definitely. So is there anything in your book right now, long or short, that's like not big enough to mention about, write about or whatever, but just shit that you like that people may not know about that you want to just throw out there?
No, I mean, I think a lot of stuff's still overheated, but I'll wait till it's turned. No, nothing. Terrific. Right. Nothing. I'm still waiting.
What are you doing for Labor Day? You got plans?
No, I'll tell you, with my kid, and we're going to play some golf.
All right. And you're a good golfer, too, right?
And that's it.
That's it. Yeah, all right. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you spending some time with me and calling in. I think everybody's going to enjoy the interview. Well, listen, have a great weekend. And
Raven, you too. Have a great Labor Day, and to all your listeners, you got a dedicated man you're listening to.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Andrew. All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That was Andrew Left of the one, the only, Citron Research. Certainly outspoken. You probably see why we get along real well. He's an eloquent man. He's like, listening to him is like laying back in a hammock and just having a cool summer breeze run across your face. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it is Labor Day weekend. It is Friday. I got shit to do, and I'm sure you do too. I will be back next week. I got a bunch of stuff planned that I'm really stoked about. And before I go, one more reminder that today's podcast brought to you by my Patreons, guys like Massimo Garrado and guys like Brent James and my friend Christine Richard and my friend Rob Ciari. I appreciate you guys very much, and I will be back soon. Okay, enjoy the weekend, fools. Peace.